Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same you as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get not that good at it yet. You could do about half of your New Year's resolution. You could learn a few songs on the piano or pick up bass guitar. Or you could start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So, try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your home. Hims provides you with the convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies on topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of the interior offensive line draft review. We've gone from 10 to 6 with our guest, Chris Aguilera. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing well. And yourself?
No complaints, and appreciate having you here. It's a great discussion, the first part. If you didn't listen to it, please go back. A lot of the guys that are on the fringe of the interior offensive line discussion are very interesting players. Some converted tackles, a lot of wrestlers, a lot of guys with really significant physical limitations that we like for other reasons. It's not a tremendously deep guard class. I think that's often the case in when you get to draft time, because a lot of the guys actually come from tackle and then they end up moving inside. And you and I each had some on our list, right, Chris?
Yep, sure did. And more to come too.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on. Who's your number six guy?
My number six guy is right on cue. Another tackle, Jonah Savainia out of Arizona. Played right tackle. Sprinkled in some left tackle reps this year due to injuries. But he's a guy who I think his home will be on the inside. Big guy, just one of those huge mountain of a man type of guys, you know, 6'4", 324, really solid legs and frame. It's just a stout player. But with him, you see that, you hear those numbers and measurements, and you think this guy is just a lumbering offensive tackle, a guy who can barely get out of his stance, but that's not the case at all with him. He has some sweet feet. He's a guy who can move very well for his size. It's really surprising to see somebody who can move like this for his size. And I do think he has the flexibility and movement skills to be able to play on the inside. To me, he doesn't consistently play up to his size. You see somebody who's 324, 325, and you would think that they'll just jump on defenders. But to me, he didn't consistently play up to that. That's not to say that he won't, that he can't sometimes overpower defenders or anything like that. But I just didn't see the consistent play as far as being someone that big and you know, outweighing his opponent, you know, 40, 50 pounds. You want to see somebody to be able to just maul people in the run game. So I would like to see him get better at that. I do think his grip strength and his, as far as his, when he's striking, that needs to be more accurate, because there were times where I saw his hands get on the outside way too many times. And you want a short, accurate punch. You want it to be like a jab. You know, you don't want your jab going on the outside. You want it to just go straight to the defender. And there were too many times where he was just going on the outside. And I wasn't a big fan of that. But again, those are things that can be fixed. You know, there are problems that are major fixes, and then there are problems that are minor fixes. And to me, that is something that can be fixed. To me right now, what I see is a big ball of clay. And I see somebody who hasn't played their best football yet, and their best football is ahead of them. And I think, like you mentioned with George Warhop, you know, you get a guy like this who he can mold and really bring out the best in him. And I think this is somebody who the arrow is pointing up, especially if you move him on the interior. And he does have snaps. He won freshman All-American at believe it was right guard. If not right guard, then left guard. But he was a freshman All-American when he first stepped onto to Arizona. So he's somebody that I really do see the vision with him. And it's like that house that isn't fixed up yet, but you see the good bones to it. Mm-hmm. So I'm really a big fan of his.
Okay, so I absolutely love Savai Nea. There's so much to love, but I had it on my tackle list. And so he is seventh among my offensive tackles. If you want to hear what I had to say about Jonah, I don't want to use up a lot of time on this episode, but I'll hit on a very few couple of points. Very rarely penalized, once every 483.6 snaps, plus athletic profile, very really outstanding athletic profile overall, including a 495 40. He can really move. He hasn't really translated that to run blocking so far, but he does maintain his feet well in level two, which you rarely see in a tackle. Usually tackles are almost all lungy in level two. Guards sometimes maintain their feet. Centers, you hope more. Gets the spot in the screen game, like that about him. I think he's an interesting case, because whoever drafts him, he has prototypical length to play tackle. And I think whoever gets him is going to try and make him use their tackle, or maybe said better, they're going to value him more because they think he can play tackle. And I love him. I mean, one of the things I said is he would probably play guard. And if he was among the guards, he would rate much higher. So if his name somehow comes up to the Ravens in round three of this draft, I'd be a very, very excited guy on that, our draft stream. I can tell you that.
You and I both, because he is somebody who you asked, I forgot what player it was you asked me about in the third round. And I was like, I think it was Bo. I was like, yeah, but this one, it's a no brainer. I'd be doing backflips and I can't even flip.
All right. I'll go to my number six guy, and that's Wyatt Milam, another converted tackle. And again, happens all the time. The best players play at left tackle in college, and a lot of them move inside. 6'6", 313, 32 and an eighth-inch arms. He ain't staying at tackle. He's moving inside for sure. Doesn't really move all that well either, 527 in the 40. Doesn't have the ideal frame for a guard either, being tall and lean and not that pear-shaped guy. Has a way too many college penalties, one every 108.6 snaps. A lot of that's a tackle, of course, and you kind of understand it. He's a three-time all-academic Big 12 player. I don't know when West Virginia moved to the Big 12. That's where they are now, but he's three-time conference all-academic, which is a good thing, and it might be something you look for in a center. If you not necessarily your center, whoever's making your line call for you, could be a guard, could be anyone who's responsible for setting the playoff. But you like smart guys on your offensive line. In terms of pass blockings, he had an extraordinary pass rush win weight in the Big 12 this last year, where he only allowed the quarterback to be taken down six times over the past three seasons and none in 2024. And PFF is lenient to a fault in terms of who they ascribe a sack or quarterback hit to. So I don't take it lightly, but I also don't take it too seriously, because there are probably others that he was involved in. The quarterback got moved off the spot and taken down by somebody else whose block was compromised by that. But in any case, he's been a very good pass blocker. He tries to make up with his lack of strength with violent hands. He's got extremely polished hand usage for this level, and that's led to a lot of his success, obviously. He'll face a different set of challenges at the next level. Can't stay a tackle, obviously, because of that. Don't think he's a particularly great run blocker, and that again, that's the combination you want. Loses his balance too much on push-pull situations. We saw that from John Simpson a lot. Was kind of a lunger and would end up on the ground because of it. That's a problem for Wyatt Milam as well, and some of it is length related. Adequate foot speed to pull. This is the thing for the Ravens that I sometimes bring up, but I don't really consider any foot speed as being too slow for the Ravens to pull. You could be too clumsy, like a Daniel Falele is really too clumsy to be given a lot of pulling assignments. But the Ravens have made good pullers out of Bradley Bozeman and James Hurst, and if you mold those two clumps of polluted clay into good pullers, then you could do it for just about anybody. So I think there is a concern over how much higher his ceiling is than he's played so far. And he might not be the Ravens sort of player given the length problem. The Colts might even take a chance on him as a tackle. They're one of the only teams that's really is willing to take a chance on a guy who's between 32 and 33 inches at tackle, since they had success with Braden Smith. But Milam is a guy I really like. I if the Ravens got him in the fourth round, I'd be pretty excited about it.
Yeah, I like him too. He's actually my number four guy.
Oh, great.
So I'm a big fan of his. I'm with you. I think he's going to be a guy who's going to be kicked inside. I did like his athleticism. I thought he had a very good understanding of leverage in the run game. West Virginia, that's one thing that they like to do. They like to run that ball. And I thought he could be a big grabby, kind of like I mentioned with Savania, where he can get his hands on the outside. And I would like to see him keep them more in that breastplate, get that, really good handle on the inside. And I just kind of saw his hands slip on the outside just a bit too much for my liking. But as far as the being able to get in space, I think he could be a bit clunky, but I do think he has linear athleticism. So when I say linear athleticism, I think he can get to a spot fairly easily. But as far as moving side to side and having that lateral agility where, you're able to target in on somebody at the second level and hit them, I thought that was, to me, that's not where he excelled at. He was able to get to those spots, but as far as being able to redirect and move, that was kind of the place where I wasn't too much of a fan of his game. You want to see somebody who can be able to, make those movements, at a split second, kind of like Marcus Bowe, where Marcus Bowe, he's at the second level if a safety is screaming down, he's able to kind of change his direction and go the other way. With Milam, you don't really see that as far as being able to redirect. And like I said, that's one of the things that I like the most is when an offensive lineman has the ability to redirect and shift their weight. And with him, I didn't really see it that much. But again, I think at left guard, I think you would see somebody where you'll see his skill set be a bit better than it was at left tackle, because I don't agree that he should be a left tackle in the next level. I do think his best spot is for sure on the interior.
All right, outstanding. So I guess we're down to your number five guy is the next one, right?
Yeah, number five. So my number five guy is Tate Ratledge.
Okay.
Out of Georgia. So, you know, Georgia is definitely going to have a place on this show. So with Tate, again, he's a guy who, unfortunately, 2023 was better than 2024, but it was due to injury. He had to get ankle surgery, the tightrope surgery, similar to what Amarius Mims had to get last season, and Brock Bowers had to get it too last season. So he suffered it early on in the season, came back in November, and he just never looked like himself. And he's a guy who, when I went back to watch in 2023, I thought he was a guy who could be a late first, early second kind of player. You know, really strong. Just as far as being the total package, you know, we spoke about what do we like as far as being able to pass block a little bit more or run block a little bit more. And for me, he was a guy specifically in 2023 where he kind of gave you the best of both worlds, where he was able to provide plus value to you in the run game, plus value to you in the pass game. I thought he had a really good anchor, especially when dealing with bull rushes. He's not a guy who would get pushed back into the lap of the quarterback. Really physical guy, just, you know, plays with that good intensity, that mean streak. And I think that's something that the Ravens offensive line misses a little bit. You know, obviously not misguided rage or anything like that, but a guy who can be the tone setter. I don't think they have that right now on their team. And he's a guy who can provide you with that and give you that physicality and just be able to be that overall guard where you don't really have a lot of deficiencies when it comes to the run or the pass. He kind of has both. And I think we definitely were robbed of seeing his best in 2024. But I think when you pop in that 2023 tape, you see a guy who can really provide an offensive line with some stability.
Okay, outstanding stuff. I agree with you, the comment about the Ravens not really having a physical tone setter at this point. They've kind of chosen to have Cleveland set aside because he could be that guy. Falele should be that guy, but he doesn't really use his hands and doesn't finish as well as he should, doesn't fall on guys the way he should. It's very easy to get frustrated with Daniel Falele. The results are actually were pretty good the last five games of the year, but he's not a guy who is as physical as he is large. The Ravens have finesse players, frankly, at left tackle, right tackle, and center. Mm-hmm. And they don't have really physical guys, and left guard would be a position to have one. And even Voorhees, while he has a lot of bench room strength, bench strength, it hasn't really translated that to the field too well in terms of functional strength. He's, you know, a lean frame guy too. So I agree with you in terms of not having a tone setter there.
Yeah, it's something that, you know, I've been wishing that they had for a while, because we got so accustomed to having Marshall Yonder there, and he was just that steady Eddie tone setter kind of guy for them for so many years. And now they've been missing that, and it's something that I've been craving for the team to have.
that with Orlando Brown too, in terms of a guy, or Ben Grubbs, if you want to go back a few years, is a guy who kind of brought more physicality to the position. But the Ravens offensive lines going back were chock full of 330-pound guards, particularly going back to the very first year of the Ravens. And it's kind of sad to see that. Orlando Brown Sr., also another player who kind of brought that. But Ratledge also happens to be my number five guy exactly. So we got a match on this one for the first time. Let me see what does not duplicate what you got. Only one penalty every 416 snaps. That was very positive. All his athletic testing is positive, and 89th percentile or higher in jumps, three cone, and the 40. That's a very unusual combination to have. I think one of the things I like, and this is a common thing with all the Georgia guys, is Ratledge always knew where the center was for exchanges and maintaining relative depth. Again, I think it's a very well-coached program, but the guard center, in this case, the right guard center combination, is very good. Processes those exchanges quickly. Good bull anchor. Thought he got an issue with his length against the Notre Dame interior defensive linemen, who were the ones that really gave him the most trouble. That was in the CFP game. That's really the only place where I thought that he had some trouble pass blocking. He's one of the few really good power gap guards in the entire draft. Most of the guys are, yeah, we like it for zone, we like it for zone, we like it for zone. And they have better movement skills. He has good movement skills. He could also be a power gap guard as well. And let's see, I'd like him to be a little cleaner and quicker when pulling. I didn't think he's the fastest get out and get moving guy. I'd like to see that be a little better with that first step and being efficient there. Very solid pivot skills, opening the gate at right guard. So he gets his hands on the defensive tackle. He pivots his own body and creates space and does a very good job with that. For the Ravens, I think if he were drafted by him, I don't think there'd be any issue with his pulling ability being a little substandard, because I think they would coach him up and get it right. I think he'd move to left guard in the NFL, and I think that's the space for him given his length. And I'd be thrilled to get him at number 91, and I would not be thrilled at getting him at 59, particularly with that injury history. So 91 would be the place for him for the Ravens. I don't anticipate the Ravens to move around as much. I know everybody wants to move up, or you know, use those 11 picks and make them into seven and whatever, and somehow turn them into seven third round picks or something. That ain't happening. So I think they'll stay at 91, and I'd be thrilled if they got Ratledge there.
I would too. Again, another guy who would make me do acrobatics, even though I don't know how to do them.
Would you be upset if they drafted him at 59?
I would be. To me, there's a cutoff. So over the last like about five seasons, it's about 12.8 offensive linemen going the first two rounds, and I have him outside of that. I have him just as far as the all offensive linemen are concerned, he's probably at about 16 for me. So that's right outside of that, and I wouldn't be too thrilled about getting him in the second round.
Okay, all right, you're number four guy then.
It was Milam.
Milam, okay. And mine was Marcus Bowe. So we're up to your number three guy.
So this guy, I love him a lot. Gray Zabel from North Dakota State. I love Gray Zabel. He's one of my favorites. A guy who you talk about versatility. You know, he's made 14 starts at center, 362 at left guard, only three at right guard, and then over 1,000 at right tackle. And then this season he had 794 at left tackle. So a guy who's played all over the line during his time at North Dakota State. And, you know, he went down to the Senior Bowl, and he looked like one of the best players, definitely the best offensive lineman at the Senior Bowl. I counted three losses that he had the whole week at practice. And, you know, we know the Senior Bowl isn't the end all be all, but when you talk about a guy coming from North Dakota State and taking the step, you know, a step ahead in as far as competition is concerned, and for him to basically shut dudes out, you know, to have damn near a clean one-on-one week in at the Senior Bowl, where in a drill that's not meant for the offensive linemen to really win, they're at a disadvantage against the defensive linemen, and he was just able to dominate guys who were projected to be in the first round. So along with the tape too, it's not just a Senior Bowl hype guy like we saw with Jason Spriggs like 10 years ago or somewhere. Jason Spriggs had a crazy Senior Bowl week, and it propelled him to be a second rounder, and you know, the tape didn't match that, but he had a great Senior Bowl week. But with Gray Zabel, he's a guy, the tape matches the Senior Bowl performance match. He's just a guy who's very aware, you know, just always aware of what's going on. And, you know, a guy who's played all over the line, that's what you expect. You expect somebody who has an awareness to them of where blitzers are coming from, where the stunt is happening, and just having good timing with whoever's next to him. I thought he played with really good physicality. He's more of a catcher than a striker, mm-hmm. meaning that he'll let the defender get into him before he really strikes and shoots his hands out. But I mean, I didn't really have a problem with it. I prefer the strikers over the catchers, but to me, like, he did his job. He did what he needed to do. And I'm going to say it again, his ability to recover was very, very impressive for me. That every tackle, every offensive lineman, they're going to lose. Everyone, they're going to lose. How do you respond to when your initial move, your initial idea, when that doesn't work and you have to improvise and have those quick twitch muscles and just have, you know, have that ability to recover and redirect? How is that? Because that's going to happen to you more times than not in the NFL. And to me, that was one of the most impressive things with him, was his ability to recover and be able to just switch up on the fly if he lost a rep or anything like that. And, you know, obviously he's a guy who's going to come in, and whichever team he's on, he's going to be able to provide them flexibility along the offensive line, like real flexibility, not just like, oh yes, he can do this, you know, in case somebody gets hurt and we have nobody else. Like, no, he has actual flexibility. And I've heard things said where some people think he's center one.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's going to be an interesting case. I do believe that he's going to be a hell of a football player at the next level.
Well, you beat me to it on the center thing, because I think that's that's his most obvious landing spot in the NFL. I discussed him with the tackles. He's actually my number 10 tackle. So I'll leave the comments on that show, which was done with James. Please go back and take a listen to that fantastic conversation, just like this with Chris. It's a fantastic conversation on offensive line play. In terms of other things about Zabel, started at four different spots you mentioned. Here's my issue with him. There's two that I have that are big. Number one is he gets penalized a ton, and it kind of reminds me of Trevor Penning, and that's never good. No, Trevor being compared to Trevor Penning is not a good thing. But he got was penalized a ton in college. Zabel, I mean, he's out matching, or should be out matching, a lot of these players that he's playing against at North Dakota State, but he's got one penalty every 132.2 snaps, which is just way too much. The other question is a more philosophical one, is you've got the era of NIL. It's almost impossible to get small school guys or even FCS guys at all being draft picks. There's many fewer of them today than there were before. Why the hell wasn't Alabama on the phone to this guy? Maybe they were, but why weren't they on the phone trying to get an extra offensive lineman that would be of real value to them, or any other SEC team that didn't have a perfect starting lineup? I mean, Gray Zabel can help any team somewhere, is one of the things about him. How does he end up playing 5 years at North Dakota State?
Well, I think he's a North Dakota State baby. His father played football at North Dakota State, and his mother played basketball and ran track at North Dakota State.
So that's a good answer. And he's from South Dakota, I know. So yeah, that might be the right answer.
He's their baby. So it'd be hard to get him out of that the place that literally created him.
lots of things to love about him. The length issues have not really become have come to the fore with him, but that'll be the issue. And he doesn't really have the build to be a guard. He's not a pear-shaped guy. He's the short arms will still give him trouble. The lean build will still give him trouble in there. I think center is the position. And we've seen a number of tackle to center conversions in recent years that have helped salvage a guy who looked like they might be a tackle prospect and ended up not being able to handle a position in the NFL. So I think it's a very reasonable expectation that he might end up at center.
Yeah, I agree. He could definitely be a center. I would like to fit with him at guard.
Okay. All right. You can handle the pulling responsibilities then, you think?
I think so. Yeah, I think he can. I don't even count tackle. I don't see him as a tackle at all. But I think at guard, I think he'll be able to. And like you said, you know, if they can teach Bozeman how to do it, you know, they could teach Zabel how to do it.
Yeah, oh, that's a good point. Okay, that was your number three guy. So I imagine we have two of the same guys at this. So I'll go ahead with my number three guys, Jared Wilson, the center from Georgia, as we hit on every single one of the Georgia interior offensive linemen on this show. And let me get that out of my notes on him here. So 6'3", 310, 32 and 3/8, that's fine. A 4.84 40, that is blazing fast for an interior offensive lineman. He's the best athlete among all the interior offensive linemen. All testing is outstanding. His jumps, his shuttle is 40. He did 23 bench reps at his pro day. That's not particularly impressive, particularly with the shorter arms, but it's okay. He had only 1,014 total snaps at Georgia. So it's really just this last year that he played as a starter. And he had just three penalties that whole time, one every 338 snaps. You want the guy to be battle-tested in the SEC. You'd also like to see him have more starts. That's okay. The guy that he clearly did not have enough college time, but played in the SEC that is a Raven of recent memory is JAD. He Armour Davis had, I don't know, he played like something like 18 or 20 games in total in college. And even though he played him at an SEC school, he did not have the same, the kind of record you'd like to see going into the NFL. So, Wilson, I think that'll be less of a factor for him. I'll go through his blocking really quickly. I thought in terms of pass blocking, very good processor. Again, I would say that about all the Georgia guys, but they hand off stunts and blitzes extremely well. Length hasn't gotten him in trouble. He's average for a center. He's not short. If he had to move to guard, which I think he could do in the NFL, length might be a bigger issue, but probably he'd still be okay there. He is susceptible to the bull rush. He can get out leveraged with his leaner frame. The Notre Dame game, there was imperilment of the cone that PFF didn't call pressures that I think that you would have to look at. And I would be more punitive in terms of.
If you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line up of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep to mental clarity and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small-farm American cannabis. So you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies. And let me tell you, takes about 15 minutes, and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, their epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise.
same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Of how he would have scored his game there. In terms of run blocking, he's not a high displacement guy, but he finishes combination blocks pretty well. One thing I didn't like about his game from a run blocking perspective is he ended up on the ground more than I would like on some run blocks. Kind of reminds me of Bradley Bozeman in a way that he either gets shed or whiffs at the line of scrimmage. And it's kind of probably a combination of both. Is he's trying to lunge out there and his arms are a little short. That defensive tackle makes first contact and kind of throws him off to one side and by him. And he kind of swims by him or gets by him while Bozeman, or in this case, Wilson, ends up on the ground. I think that he'll adapt his pulling style in the NFL, whether he's at left guard or center, and that'll be fine. I don't see him as a right guard. I think he's more of a finesse player than a lock on and twist right guard. I think you want a bigger, more powerful guy at that position. And I guess the durability concerns from the injuries, both before and after and during, the 24 season. So he had some sort of thing that kept him out of camp. And then he got into the regular season and he missed, I think, one or two games. The Ravens will look at that. There's probably nothing serious since he played afterwards, but you know, injury flags are injury flags. You don't want, I don't like repetitive soft tissue injuries in any player, but I also think that how you run your camp often is part of that problem. How do you feel about that, Chris? Is that something, do you blame soft tissue injuries ever on the coach?
I mean, I just think it's a physiological issue. Just everybody's body is just different. There are guys who, for whatever reason, their hamstrings, you can always count on it. Like, I remember Ryan Matthews. He was one of those guys, the old Chargers running back, where it was just, it seemed like every week he had something going on with his hamstring. So I just think it's a physiological issue. And I mean, obviously you have those coaches who will run some players into the ground before the season even starts. It's always a case by case thing.
Now, if I recall correctly, you left centers off, so you're probably not going to have Wilson, but maybe we need to discuss this real quickly right now. Wilson is one of the guys that I think you could bring in. He might even get playing time in 2026 at left guard. 25, and then he might be a guy who'd replace Linderbaum in 26 if he walks. And I know people are not going to be happy to hear about this, and I really hope the Ravens get it done, but that doesn't mean you don't plan for other eventualities. And the timing of events is such that the draft occurs on 424 to 26, and the fifth-year option is given out on 5-2. So the Ravens will have to plan for a life without Linderbaum if they don't have him signed by draft night.
Yeah. Now the question is, where do you take that player? That's going to be the question for not just for you, but for the Ravens, you know, if that's their thinking. And we've seen them, you know, time and time again, where, you know, a lot of fans and, you know, casual, you know, draft people, they just want to think about the 2025 season. But
yeah,
the Ravens have shown you that they're not drafting just for the season that's coming up. They're drafting for the future. And, you know, Nate Wiggins was one of those picks. You know, you go all the way back. Jimmy Smith was one of those picks. You know, in the middle, Marlon Humphrey was one of those picks where it's not a need at the moment, but they're looking towards the future. And I think that's something that's always on their mind. And if they see a value at a position where they can see the – go ahead.
That's great. Kyle Hamilton was one of those picks.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You get right into it. I mean, yep. A guy who, why do we need a safety? We've got Marcus Williams.
Right. And you know, look, a couple years later, Marcus Williams isn't here. You know, last year, why Nate Wiggins? You know, we have Marlon Humphrey. We have Brandon Stevens, who's coming off of a great year. And where would this team be without Nate Wiggins last year? You know, it would have been rough. So, you know, it doesn't always make sense on draft night, but they have a plan in place when it comes to planning for the future.
Where would you be okay with them drafting Jared Wilson? Would you be okay with a round 3 pick, not number 91 for him? Or would you be, you want to get him cheaper? Where would be your position on that?
So I think he's probably going to go probably late second, early third, around that range. Okay. For the Ravens, for me, that would be a little bit too rich. But I do see other teams probably valuing him more at center and you know, probably being more pressed to take him than the Ravens would be.
All right. Outstanding. So we've gone down to my number three. Now, I wonder if we have the same number two and number one players. Who is your number two guy?
My number two guy is Tyler Booker. Okay. Tyler Booker, you know, love him. Team captain. We know the Ravens love that. You know, you read reports about him and what scouts are saying, and everybody's just saying he was, I think it was Daniel Jeremiah who said he was the Will Anderson of the offense, which is a huge compliment because Will Anderson was one of those guys that I think it was Nick Saban who said, like, this is the kind of guy that you want to marry your daughter. Like, that's how how much he loved Will Anderson. So for Tyler Booker to get that kind of praise from scouts and, you know, high level officials, that says a lot about his character and the kind of leadership that he brings on the field. Stout at the point of attack. You know, this is not a guy that you have to worry about when it comes to being able to protect the integrity of the pocket. He's a guy who's going to be, you know, just stonewall as far as trying to negate any kind of bull rushes against him. Limited mobility for him, but I don't think it's to the point where you can't have him pull. It's not his strong suit. It's not something to hang his hat on, but I don't think he's a slouch either. Like, I think you mentioned it with Falele, where he's just clumsy and clunky in space. And I don't think Booker is clumsy or clunky. It just doesn't look as smooth as it would for other players. But I think he's somebody that you can ask to do that occasionally. Just as a run blocker, you know, one of the top run blockers in his class. Now, pass pro, that's, to me, if you have him in pass pro, like I said, you don't have to worry about him ever being bull rushed back. He's very stout. Now, what I do have some concerns about with him is the ability to handle those quicker interior guys. You know, as you know, as we go further along in the NFL, we see these quicker Kalijah Kancey types who you know, they win with the quickness off the snap. And I think those quicker guys are going to give Tyler Booker some issues because he does have some quickness issues when it comes to those faster guys on the interior. And we know how fast everything happens on the inside. So I do think that's something that early on could give him some trouble. But it isn't anything where I think like, oh yeah, he's, you know, he's going to fail because of this. Like I think early on it'll give him issues, but I do think he has the, you know, the work ethic and just the smarts to be able to really refine his game and become the player that I think he'll be, because to me, he's a really, really good football player and I love him.
Yeah, I think, you know, being a good football player, being a good leader, being a good, you know, a smart leader in a lot of ways is some of what Tyler Booker gives you. His testing is pretty much all below average, but the results on the field certainly are not. He's one of the best interior offensive line pass blockers in the class, just average as a run blocker. And again, that's the split you want. You want good pass blocker, not so good run blocker if you have to be different in both. Penalty rate is a little high. It was higher in 24. With one every 111.1, about one every 200 for his career. His pass blocking uses his length effectively. He's 34 and a half inch arms, by the way. Very unusual for a center to be that. The last guy I can remember who had those kind of length of arms was Lloyd Cushenberry a few years ago with LSU, but he has very long arms. He uses that very well. His length, his size, has a good reverse C in what he's doing. His flexibility makes him almost impervious to the bull rush. Now, he's going to get beaten inside or outside sometimes, but he looks to end reps quickly with that being one of his primary techniques. He's trying to use his long arms, get inside, get his hands on the chest plate, get his hands on the jersey, get his hands in the armpit of the opposing player to try and get that rep locked out early. And he does a pretty good job with that. I think his processing speed is just okay for stunts and blitzes. It's not terrible, but that may be Alabama coaching. I think it's something that could be done well. If he was playing at Georgia, I'd probably be talking about how great he was in that category. In terms of run blocking, I have the same concerns you have, so I won't go over each of them. He has a little bit of trouble getting up to level two sometimes. Think he needs to maintain and finish his run blocks better, particularly those he makes in level two. Don't just hit the guy and let go. I think NFL coaching will correct most of his run blocking deficiencies. He's not super fleet of foot, so it's not going to fix everything about him, but I think he'll be a good player. You know, smart player, team leader, forced to lead by example, all those kind of things are going to make it more likely that he'll pick those things up at the pro level. Right. He played left guard at Alabama, but that's really not the ideal spot for him. I think he's a natural right guard. First of all, it limits some of the mobility concerns you have. If you have a right-handed run game, he's the guy who's pivoting. And I think he's exceptionally well-tooled to pick up that craft at the NFL level. So he'll open the front gate. If you're playing for the Ravens, that's for sure where I'd want him playing. Now, that does present a problem with the Ravens because they have a guy at right guard currently who can pretty much only play right guard. And that is a drafting concern for the Ravens, is that they really need a left guard skill set that they can pick up. They've already got a guy who is maybe isn't an ideal fit at left guard in Voorhees. Kind of thought he might end up being the right guard for the Ravens, or maybe it would be Cleveland with him at left guard. But I always thought Voorhees was a little out of position in terms of what he's doing there. I presume Voorhees will probably be the guy who wins the job on opening day next year. Doesn't mean his job is safe, certainly, for the whole year by any stretch. But the Ravens really need left guard traits to pick that up. And Booker is really, to my way of thinking, he's a right guard more than that. If you're around at 59, the Ravens might or might not select him among other needs, but I think there's a good chance that he would be gone by 59. Where would you sit in terms of value and where the Ravens ought to get him?
I would take him in the first round.
Really?
It would be, to me, if he's there, it would be probably one of my top choices to take him in the first round.
Okay. All right, I can't get behind that. I'm sorry. If they traded back and, you know, it's 40, 45, they get him at maybe, but the last time the Ravens drafted a guard in the first round was Ben Grubbs, and I just remember how upset I got with that pick. They got a pretty good player, but, you know, they of course got beaten out of Joe Staley one pick earlier when the 49ers traded ahead of him.
Yeah, I mean, that goes to the whole, you know, positional value conversation, things like that. If I think a player is good, I'm taking him, you know, okay. No matter what the position is. Because we're not talking about kickers or punters here. But, you know, I think he's that good. And, you know, it goes to like the Malachi Starks conversation where people are like, no, we don't need him. But to me, he's a top 10 player in this draft. So if he's there at 27, I'm taking him. Booker is, for me, he's a top 20 player, top 25 player in this draft. So if he's there at 27, then I'd be ecstatic with that pick.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I respect your commitment, your passion about that. Booker was my number one guy. So I guess my number two is probably your number one, I'm guessing. So we're talking about Donovan Jackson, right?
Mm-hmm, yep.
Okay, go ahead and start us off, and I'll toss in my notes second.
So I've gone through a whirlwind when it comes to Donovan Jackson. I watched him over the summer, and, you know, he was one of these guys who was, you know, this is the top guard. I watched him in 2023. I hated him. I did not like his game. I thought he was slow. I thought his body composition just wasn't right. He was just very stumpy and clunky in the way that he moved. And when I watched him in 2024 to begin the season, I saw a player who transformed his body, who moved really well compared to his 2023 tape. His body looked a lot better. He looked leaner. He was more athletic. So for me, what that shows me is that that's somebody that's working on their craft. You know, so much of the draft is a crapshoot when it comes to the kind of work ethic that these guys have, how much time they're going to put in just on their personal time, because we know they have a regimented schedule with their coaches and their team. But what are they doing outside of that? And to me, with Donovan Jackson, that showed that that's a guy he's not just going through the motions. He's not just collecting his NIL money. He's working to be great at his craft. And to transform yourself and your body and to elevate your play the way that he did, and then along with having to play left tackle in the middle of the season. And it started off terribly. You know, he was getting whooped. You watched the Penn State game. I think that was his second game at left tackle. And he was just getting whooped. And it's like, they have to do something about this. And as the season went on, he improved as a left tackle, where so much to the point where there are people who believe he can be a left tackle and think that he might get drafted as a left tackle. I think his best place is at guard. But when you watch the tape, I can't be mad at those people who project him as a left tackle, because he did put out good tape there. So the fact that he was able to not only improve at guard, but improve in season at left tackle, that just shows me somebody who is mentally just made different. Like, there's just something different going on in that guy's head, because to get beat like a drum your first two starts at left tackle, and then to not let that get you down, you know, you work at it, you get better at it. And to me, that just it made me really respect him and the way that he goes about this game, his game. I think he's excellent at pass pro. To me, he's the best pass blocking interior defender in this draft. I really do like the way that he approaches his pass sets. He has really good length and he uses it well on the interior. He isn't a guy who's going to, you know, really move folks in the run game. He's, you know, he'll put his body on you, but he's not somebody where you see his size and you're like, oh, he's a mauler. No, he's not a mauler, but he does just enough for you in the run game. To me, where he has the chance to be elite is his pass blocking.
Yeah.
It's like the ability to just mirror defenders, be able to recover. It's just, to me, it's really what I would like for the Ravens to have on this offensive line, because like I mentioned earlier, we know that Monken, he wants to be able to leave guys on an island, and he doesn't want to have to worry about, like we saw with Makari, where guys were just able to put him on skates and push him right into Lamar's lap. With a guy like Donovan Jackson, I think he would just bring so much stability to the offensive line and really fit what Monken wants to do with his offensive linemen.
Right. The game you're mentioning where he got just destroyed at midseason two was also against Abdul Carter, who's going to be one of the top five picks in this draft. Might even be number one, might be number two, but is a, you know, a hell of a football player. I have a few things about Jackson. I did move him to guard from my tackle list. I could have put him at either, I guess. Really low penalty rate is positive at one every 321.4. As a pass blocker, there were still some things I didn't really like about what he did. He stands straight up on some plays, which kind of negates a lot of his value as a bull rush bulwark. He's definitely a guy who stops the bull rush fairly effective generally, but when he stands straight up, it just pisses me off in terms of seeing a guy playing with poor technique. Good grip strength, lots of lockout reps. And so that's something you like to see. But you know what? No matter how many lockout reps you get, it's only going to be a small percentage of your total pass blocking successes. So if you have to succeed 97% of the time to be a good pass blocker, let's say you have 97% efficiency, then you can't win more than about 20% of those by you know, lockout reps where you're quickest man to the draw, you get to his armpit, you get him slowed out right away, and the rep is over. I think that's, you know, it could be overrated, but it's good. It's what he did was good. I think he sometimes overreacts to half man moves, which leave him vulnerable to counter moves. So, okay. I explained this on the offensive tackle show, but I'll do this again. So unless you're bull rush is a full man move. It's a straight on man. But if you, every other pass rush move basically is a half man move where you either continue on that side or you flip to the other side. So Euro step and spin are moves where you flip to the other side after showing them a particular half man move. Things like ripping, swimming, or dipping are moves where you're continuing along on the same side. So I thought that he had some overreaction to those half man moves, may have been length related. He doesn't have really substandard length. It's at 33.5 inches. He's okay. But he does leave himself vulnerable on the inside by a little bit of overreaction. It may also be that he's just a little bit less of an athlete than a lot of the pass rushers he's facing, and that's giving him some problems. So that was my concern about him as a pass rusher. I think he'll be better on the inside, and I think the more you put him against players who don't have this full bag of tricks, the better his chance is to stop them, and that's why I like him a lot more at guard, or one of the reasons. In terms of his run blocking, I think he's very lungy in space. I expect that normally out of a tackle. It's something he's got to get a little bit better at, keeping his feet, delivering blocks on time in level two. He's not ideal for a zone blocking scheme. I think he's kind of a step slow. He doesn't have that that ideal ability to line up his blocks against a level two defender in a zone scheme, say, that you'd want. He probably is more of a risk to get his face crossed also. So not ideal zone blocking traits. But I think he could probably succeed on pulls with the right coaching. Certainly, again, that's bringing it back to the Ravens and Bradley Bozeman and James Hurst as examples. I think they can coach that up. I think he'll be fine on the back end of counter plays where he has to be taught decisiveness. The hardest thing to do is figure out who you're going to block as the second man on a pull. First of all, you have to kind of wait for the first guy, and then you have to, oh wait, I was going to get him. You have to figure out who you're going to get next. And it can often be someone well downfield, and you're choosing between that and some sort of U-turn block to come back and try and seal that edge. So you have to be decisive. You have to make a choice. You have to go with it and make your block. And I think he can be taught that. So he's a bigger guy, so he'll be fine with that. Not a displacement guy at the line of scrimmage. Again, very few people in this draft do I attribute that to in any regard. So I don't have a problem with it. And an impactful down blocker. A criticism as a down blocker, and this has to be coached out pretty much right away, is that he likes to finish down blocks instead of moving to level two. Get that guy off balance, leave the finish for your guard. And I think you're doing the right thing, but he finishes a few too many of those plays. I think he could be left guard. He could be right guard. He could be a swing guard tackle with the Ravens. He certainly could provide depth in case of injury in this first year. I think taking him as an option as a future right tackle would also work, but it triggers what I call the Rosengarten gambit. As soon as you take a future right tackle and you don't really have to decide on Donovan Jackson right away. That's part of the beauty of him. But if you decide he's your right tackle of the future at some future point, then you have to be sure that Rosengarten is your left tackle of the future at some future point when Ronnie's gone. So I don't think that's a certain thing. I don't think the Ravens know if they have their left tackle of the future right now in Rosengarten. So I think they have to be very careful about it. I don't think Donovan Jackson should be playing left tackle in the NFL. So it's really based on some of the counter move and weaknesses in terms of overreaction that he's had. So I think it's really a case of do you want him to be a guard? And I think that's where he should be in the NFL. I think he'd be a fine left guard for the Ravens. He's my number two overall guard in this draft. It certainly brings a lot to the position relative to some of the other guys who are in the draft this year. Would love to see him in round two drafted by the Ravens. And that may be unrealistic because they're probably will be somebody who will take him in round one.
Yeah, I think that left tackle, it's like cleavage, you know, for some GMs and some scouts where they're like, oh, you know, we need that left tackle. And I don't see him as a left tackle, but I could see some teams or some evaluators being in love with him as far as being able to develop him if he can have a full offseason dedicated to just playing left tackle. So I'm with you. I don't think he'll be there in the second round.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. That's our entire list. I really appreciate doing this with you, Chris. How about we do one each honorable mention? I know we got to some of our honorable mention guys, but who's a like an honorable mention you'd really like to see with the Ravens?
Well, the only one I have left, because the other ones were mentioned, is Miles Frazier from LSU. You know, he's another guy who in 2023, I thought he was going to be one of the top guards. I watched him along with Emory Jones and Will Campbell. And, you know, just the way that he worked, he did such a great job of playing under control. And just, it's similar to Emory Jones. I don't know what happened in 2024 where it all basically just went to shit for some reason. I don't know what happened, but if he's a guy who will be around there in the later rounds, I would take a chance on him because of that 2023 tape and the pedigree that he has.
That's a good one. He's on my honorable mention list as well, as you can see. The guy I want to just deserves mention because he is the most unusually shaped guard in maybe ever relative to the other groups that are playing there. But Willie Lampkin out of North Carolina, 5'11", 290. 5'11", 290. Mm-hmm. And he's playing guard at a pretty high level at UNC. There's nobody who's played NFL at that kind of either weight or height in many years. He's an interesting player for the Ravens because I could see him at center in the NFL. Great leverage player, played three years at Coastal Carolina, two more at UNC, all 5 years as a starter. He does get penalized a lot. He's like John Simpson level penalties, one every 128.8 snaps. And for an interior offensive lineman, that's very high. He has some length problems that show up in pass blocking, but I kind of like him there as a leverage guy. And I really like him in the run blocking game in terms of being able to get under the pads. And he is remarkable. That is very fast out of his stance. Even it kind of reminds me of the other side of the ball again, but Sam Adams was a guy I'm watching now again for this 2000 season to do another series I'm working on. And Sam Adams, he's the biggest man on the Ravens, even bigger than Siragusa. He's unbelievably quick out of his stance, just unbelievably quick. And Lampkin has some of that in terms of being a fast guy out of his stance. Anyway, he'd be a guy I'd love to see the Ravens. Might be a UDFA, might be a 5, a 6, a 7. Anywhere in there would be fine. If his name gets called, I'm going to be cheering.
Yeah, there were even some teams that had him doing some fullback workouts too. So.
Oh, damn, that makes all kinds of sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, so my God, it could that be the could next be a possibility. Card. How did I not think of that? That's fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. All right, Chris, so much fun doing this with you. Thanks for taking a couple hours out of your busy day for this. Tell folks where they can find your material online.
You can just find me on Twitter, Chris Just Joking, and also on the Deep Cover podcast with Michael Crawford and Kerry Stevenson, and also a Draft Junkie show that I've been doing with Coach Evans on Sip to Tally, and every Monday night I do a Ravens roundup with Coach Evans, Lunch Break Hot Take, and Hendo. So you know, check us out every Monday 9 p.m.
I don't know Lunch Break Hot Take or Hendo, but I recommend all of those other content creators. They're fantastic. You know, you get to work with Coach. I'm sure that's all kinds of fun. And Michael Crawford's one of my favorite people to talk football with. I haven't talked football with Kerry in a long time, but appreciate you guys and what you do. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. I'm always open to your new ideas. I want to do those during the off season. Best chance to do is going to be after the draft at this point. Join us please on draft night for all three nights. We're your place to come and watch the draft itself, react in real time with other Ravens fans who care about the Ravens and they don't really give a crap about any other team. Mm-hmm. Pretty much everything about it is completely Ravens centric. It's what, you know, how does this pick affect the Baltimore Ravens? Not, you know, how did the number one overall draft picks cat, how did he play a role in getting him drafted? We don't get into that human interest crap, Ola. So it's a lot of fun. We work on the same spreadsheet together and have a lot of fun doing it. And please feel free to join us on any of the 3 days. Ravens have a lot of picks this year. It'll be a lot of fun. Chris, thanks again for joining me.
I appreciate you having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.